Hello everyone and welcome to Eat Life Stories, a show dedicated to all the biddlers, the hodlers, the crazy ones, and the amazing community that calls Ethereum its home. I'm your host Dennis Omer, and over the next 40 minutes we're going to go on a journey to explore their stories. My guest today is a highly active member of the Ethereum community. He's been part of this space for years now. He's traveled around the world connecting with people and being part of the family, and that's how I got to know him. And he also happens to be head of integrations at a project you might have heard of called Chainlink. I'm happy to introduce my friend Johan. Johan, how are you doing, my man?
Perfect. Thank you for having me, Dennis. I'm doing great.
Now, before we talk about Chainlink and we dive into oracles and even talk about DeFi, you're from France, even though you travel all around the world and you might not be there now. But I just want to take this opportunity to learn a bit more about what's happening in the French crypto community. What's the focus? What are people working on?
Yeah, I think just like the rest of the space, right? French people are mostly focused on DeFi. So DeFi has been also hype. You have a lot of French founders, a lot of French people who are deep in the space. Mark from Aave, you have Pascal from Jarvis. Like, you have a lot of people who are kind of getting involved, right? But yeah, look, the way I look at this, Dennis, is that's all international, right? That's all international. And so the way I interact with these people right now is on Twitter and stuff because, you know, since the pandemic, that's where everything is happening, right? So the French community, just like everywhere, is really getting into DeFi. But I think that's really a global thing, right? Every country out there, people are getting into DeFi. People are getting into the products. They're building stuff. The reason for this, I think, is just this global shift where people are seeing the current system we have and they're seeing the DeFi system and they say, okay, yeah, maybe there is something there, right?
Yeah.
So that's what's happening in France, but just like every country out there, I believe.
Yeah. So just a very important follow-up question then, just to tie it down to get a better picture of France, like, is the government okay with it or they're not draconian about it, right? Because in my country, in Cyprus, I mean, it's viewed kind of negatively and banks don't like to touch it, which makes life so much harder when you're in crypto, right? Like your on-ramp, off-ramp problem, like there are challenges there. How is it in France?
Yeah, I think the government has been supportive. You know, obviously they're looking for the usual stuff governments look for, right? But no country in Europe, in my view, wants to be the first one taking restrictive actions, right? Because if anyone takes, you know, some kind of hard stance against crypto, all of the crypto entrepreneurs will just run away and go to another country, right? Like, there is choice out there. So in France, it's been quite good, actually. We've had some ministers, I think, which were quite positive around crypto.
Yeah, that's good to know. And I think in Europe in general, it's not like it doesn't take as harsh a line as some other places in the world. Now, from there, I want to talk about DeFi. I mean, you've been part of this space for quite a while now. You followed DeFi's kind of growth trajectory. You know, you saw what projects came. How do you see where we are right now? I mean, there's an explosion in excitement. There's layer two stuff coming. Like, how would you describe like DeFi compared to maybe a year, 2 years ago?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it was completely different. 2 years ago, I think we were maybe at 6 million TVL. You had some people like Synthetics, which were, you know, kind of everyone was calling, you know, everyone was putting in kind of question what they were doing, right? Like no one really was paying attention to DeFi. No value was there. And I actually don't remember what really triggered this thing to blow off, right? I think it was slow at first and then it went very quickly. But the TVL went from 6 million to a few hundred in a few months. And I think we're in a different world, right? Different paradigm, right? Different paradigm because you have many more DeFi applications than you had before. I think maybe, you know, at least 100 times more, right? I mean, you have so many synthetics platforms, so many money markets, you have so many futures, leverage, DEX trading. All of this stuff, it has just blew up, right? I mean, Uniswap has more volume than most centralized exchanges. It's just a different world, right? Not only on the DeFi side, but also on how people look at DeFi, right? Like 2 years ago, I don't think the average people had anywhere near the financial literacy that they have today, right? And I think the recent events have really pushed the normal average people, even those outside of crypto, to start paying attention, you know? Because if you look at your financial system and you see everything that's happening in the last few months, and then you look at this alternative, which is DeFi, everything makes sense, right? So I think as far as the infra is concerned, you know, as far as how many applications do we have, how many developers do we have, how many protocols, how much capital. This has all kind of blew up. It's a different, completely different world than we had 2 years ago. But even as far as the potential which we have, which is how many people are paying attention to DeFi and starting to understand, I think this is also completely different. Like, this number has grown exponentially, you see? So yeah, it's very hard not to be extremely, extremely optimistic. I think the next wave of people who will be coming into DeFi will be all the traditional people, right? And in the next few months, 2 years, I really do expect us to have full parity with the traditional kind of financial system, right? And, you know, after this, then we go to a new age of exploratory, of discovery, right? What can you create when you have a fully decentralized, transparent world, which is fully open, which is fully global? What kind of value can you create for people from there, right? And we've had a small hint from what we see today in the space, but I think the next 1 or 2 years will be a completely new thing in the history of finance, history of the world, and, you know, finance affects everything we see, right? So it will be really, really interesting to see what happens when all the traditional people start flowing into DeFi. I think we're getting there, and I have no doubt at this point it's going to happen. It's more a question of when, not if, you see?
Yeah, you present a very exciting past, present, and future, and I'm completely on board with that. I've experienced that firsthand. Like, even at Kyber, since we deployed in 2018, it was like small pieces, just like proof of concept, just getting out of the door, very low number of users, but those users start to trickle and like grow over time. You had more services come in, Uniswap was launched, we started experimenting and building up the money Legos. And now, like, the money Legos is a whole bucket where you have so many tools that you can build anything, you know? So that's what's been incredibly exciting, actually observing this. You've observed it as you described it, and I observed it firsthand as well. And now it's like a Cambrian explosion, and the future is very exciting. And from there, I want to move on to oracles. And maybe for some people who aren't very familiar, I want to start from the beginning and lay the groundwork for our discussion by asking you, what are oracles and why are they so important in the context of blockchains and important in the context of all this, you know, very exciting DeFi applications that we talked about?
Yeah, so Dennis, it's a great question. Look, the way I look at this, right, for DeFi applications, you have two parts. You have the smart contract part, which is a whole business logic, right? It's basically for synthetics, for Aave, I'm going to lend, I'm going to borrow, I'm going to mint a synthetic asset, you know. That's what the whole smart contract part does. There is a user which triggers an action and the smart contract processes it, right? The other part is the Oracle part. And the Oracle part is the one which feeds all the data into the business logic. For instance, when you're going to mint a gold token on synthetics, what is the price of gold? What is the price of SNX, the collateral, right? If you're going to borrow some USDT against ETH on Aave, what is the price of ETH? What is the price of USDT? Now, you really do need to know this price very well. Otherwise, if you don't have a reliable oracle, which is what Chainlink is, then the price you're getting into your system could be false. What this would mean is that people could be depositing money and they could be borrowing money. And maybe if the price of ETH is said to be, let's say, you know, 2,000 instead of 3,000, right? Then people could be, they could maybe kind of, you know, borrow less, or they could be liquidated. Like, there are many, many issues which come from a system which doesn't have good data, right? It just doesn't work. People wouldn't be depositing their money if they had some kind of faulty kind of system which doesn't give them the right price of the assets they're depositing, they're lending, or in the case of something like synthetics, they're minting, you see? So the oracles are the bridge between getting the data for pricing data for every asset out there and much, much more, right? Like, with oracles, you can do insurance, you can do many more things. But in the case of DeFi, this is mostly what we've seen. People need reliable prices. These assets which they're using are being traded not only on DEXs, but also mostly on centralized exchanges, right? So you do need all of this centralized exchange data to know the price of an asset in a reliable way. And this is what Chainlink is providing. this is what we've been doing for the last, I think now nearing almost, well, with DeFi projects, almost 2 years, right? It's really providing these key prices for them to be able to leverage on mainnet, right? And right now, I think we have around probably a few 15 to 20 billions of TVL being secured by our price feeds. And this is across around 100 DeFi projects which are deployed on Ethereum mainnet, but also on other blockchains. So yeah, that's what oracles provide. And you have no choice in the matter. If you want to create a DeFi application, you do need reliable oracles. You know, it's like you are trying to deploy a smart contract on an AWS kind of server. Otherwise, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it easy to build an oracle? From my understanding, it's not. It's kind of complex to build an oracle, right? So, what is the main challenges to actually building oracles? Like, what are the main parameters that really have to be gotten right? Otherwise, the system doesn't work. Is it like, because I'm guessing there's a consensus mechanism almost within Chainlink that has to decide how prices are determined, right? So what is the main challenge with kind of providing oracle services?
Yeah, definitely. Let's look at the security assumptions, right, for an oracle. Like, the security assumptions you're looking to get are the very same that a blockchain has, and more in a way, right? The first one is really decentralization. How do we create a group of incentivized participants who are going to be feeding prices into the blockchain, right? So here, it's not a very trivial matter, because if these participants were to be malicious, right, if they were to feed bad prices, this would affect the price that's being fed into the application, right? So here what you make sure of is you come up with a reputation system, right? You make sure that every participant who's running a node both has experience doing it, right? Either they've been doing this for years, or either they already have an established reputation. For instance, T-Systems, which is a subsidiary of Deutsche Telekom, is one of our node operators, right? So you try to come up with a good kind of reputation to allow this property of decentralization to take place, right? Because decentralization needs to happen, but it needs to happen with good actors, right? So that's the first part. The consensus is the second part. The consensus is, how do I make sure that, you know, every participant is going to come up with a price of their own, right? So every participant is going to come up with, maybe, you know, Ethereum is 2000, maybe it's 1900, you know. How do you combine all of these prices in a way which makes sense? Now, the way Chainlink does it right now with what we call our off-chain reporting system, which is it's based on research we've been doing for the last 2 years, right? It's a way to aggregate all of the data from these node operators, these participants off-chain. The way we do it is, all of these responses from operators will be aggregated into a median, and this median will then be fed on-chain, right? So this is the current consensus we have. The source of truth will be the median of all the prices we get. And what this allows us to do is discard all the outlier values you would get, right? So let's say you have all of the node operators answering that the price is around 2000, and one node operator answers that the price is, let's say, you know, 200, then this gets discarded directly through the median, you see? So yeah, that's basically the way we do it right now. Now, creating an oracle system is not an easy manner. It's not an easy task, right? It's obviously, there are a lot of considerations. The other one is really data. You need to make sure that the data your node operators are getting is actually accurate. It covers the whole market, right? So what we've done on our side with the node operators we're working with, right, who run price feeds on Chainlink, they're getting data directly from data aggregators with a very kind of reputable and kind of track record, right? So Kaiko, Brave New Coin, Crypto Compare, we have around 7 to 9 data providers who are node operators have experience with. These data aggregators, what they do is that they provide a full market coverage of for any crypto asset, right? What's very important is not to be sourcing data from single exchanges, because if you start doing this, you know, if you are sourcing data from only Coinbase, for instance, or from one single exchange, then your whole system depends on this exchange not shutting down or not having an issue, are not having an outage when the price is volatile, right? You don't want billions of dollars on DeFi relying on one single exchange. So what we do is we take aggregators, they take the full market coverage, and you know they do it in a good way, which works, right? That's a very important point. It's really data quality. When you get both data quality as well as a decentralized distributed set of node operators sourcing this data, and these node operators need to all have some reputations, they need to have some credentials, they need to have teams which can you know have pager duty and are around for basically the whole day and the whole night, right? I mean, these people, they can be waken up at any point in time during the day. Well, I hope they don't sleep during the day, but during the night.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there is an issue with their nodes, they get woken up, they need to be on standby, they need to start working on it, right? I mean, all the teams we're working with have incident response teams, which whenever their monitoring calls them, they're awake, they're dealing with problems, right? This is really what needs to happen to have kind of, you know, something secure here. So that's what we have today. In the future, we're working on even more things beyond reputation, beyond data quality, beyond, you know, kind of the off-chain reporting scheme, which has all the threshold signature research we've been working on for a few years with people like Ari Jules, you know, who was a chief scientist at Cornell, at RSA. So the next things we're working on are staking. They're kind of, you know, improving even more the reputation system. They're having service level agreements, which would be directly on-chain, right? So we'd get on-chain commitments from node operators to respect some data delivery kind of schedule or kind of agreements. So, you know, building a decentralized network of nodes is definitely not something trivial. Now, what would be trivial is building a system of nodes, and what we've seen around, right, is building an oracle which would work 90% of the time, but could fail 10% of the time, right? And that's what we've seen, and this one is an easy task. On our side, what we're building is something that's supposed to work 100% of the time. And, you know, during Black Friday, Black Thursday.
Yeah, Black Thursday.
Black Thursday last year. Yeah, this one, I'm not sure we'll ever forget this one. you know, and all the other events where the gas prices, when the Uni airdrop, where the gas prices on Ethereum were maybe 1,500 Gwei at some point. During all of these crazy events, our price feeds continued updating. Our node operators were on standby. They were monitoring. They were working on their nodes. They were making sure their nodes had enough kind of gas to process transactions. The system has been extremely reliant in many, many different events, which were, to be, you know, honest, very crazy events, right? As far as congestion on Ethereum goes and, you know, many other factors. So, yeah, that's my long, long answer to your question.
Yeah, but you touched on some great points. And I just wanted to ask you, let's talk about gas price then, because anyone who's actually used Ethereum knows what a painful experience that is, especially in the last few months, right? And Chainlink, from my understanding, does write quite a lot of data on chain just because it's used everywhere and it has to keep updating the price. So can you give us an idea of like how much it costs this whole system, and B, like how the system is incentivized and kind of who is like paying for the price? Is it like, what is the incentive mechanism like there in relation to these gas costs and any other costs?
Yeah, definitely. So the way it works right now, and yeah, you're very right, like basically Ethereum is a pricey network, right? Now on the bright side, on our end, the way we've optimized our system with off-chain aggregation, for instance, we're able to have decentralized Oracle networks without having to have each Oracle report the price on-chain by himself, right? So I'm going to give you an example. Before, the way the system used to work, we would have 21 nodes for reporting the price of ETH, and every node would need to post the price on-chain where it would get aggregated, right? This was obviously quite pricey. You had to have 21 nodes every time. Now, the way the system currently works, you have 21 nodes which are all aggregating the price of ETH off-chain, and then you have a relayer which is randomly picked from this set of nodes, which will be posting the price of ETH by himself, right? And, you know, this relayer obviously gets circled back across a set of nodes. But what happens now is that only one price is posted, which reports the aggregation of 21 nodes, right? So on our side, we've been working on a kind of optimizations, which have worked quite well, right? And which are saving a lot of gas costs for the network. Now, regarding the way node operators are being incentivized, they're paid in link, right? And the link comes from two things. The link comes from a node operator subsidy fund, and kind of it's like a network subsidy, right? It's very similar to Bitcoin. Bitcoin right now is being fueled, like the way it works on the security side is miners are being paid in BTC, newly mined BTC, every new block, right? The way it works with Chainlink is an amount of Link token is dedicated to subsidizing node operators. Every time, every time they answer and say they report the price, right? Node operators will be paid from two sources. The first one, which used to be a big portion, but is getting smaller and smaller, is a subsidy from the Chainlink network. And the other one is the user fees. So what's happening is that every user who's consuming from a price feed is currently paying an amount in Link on a monthly kind of on a schedule, right? And what happens now is that the fees that are paying the operators are coming both from users and from the subsidy. So the way it will work with time is that the user fees will take more and more the position of paying the node operators, right? So basically, as we get more and more users, the part that user fees are covering for node operators gets bigger and bigger, right? And that's how we'll kind of be able to see the success of the network as far as sustainability, right? The more users we onboard, the more user fees are collected, the less the subsidy has to be, right? And that's exactly how you kind of measure the success of Bitcoin in a way, right? Can Bitcoin be fully sustainable in a few years? Well, for this, you need to have user fees be more than the current subsidy that's being paid to miners, right? And that's a very similar kind of paradigm with Chainlink. And on Ethereum, I'm very pleased to say that we have some feeds like ETHUSD, which have more than 25 users, right? So 25 paying users, which means that the user subsidy and the user fee, sorry, is getting more and more important compared to the network subsidy that pays node operators, you see? So yeah, that's how it currently works. Obviously, every node operator is being paid in the Link token, which is really the token that allows all of this to happen, right? And yeah, it's a network and kind of a model that's been working great and that we plan to see work even greater whenever some networks are fully sustainable, being sustained only by user fees out there. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think it will play out like that. The whole Ethereum space has kind of put effort into layer two as well, just so that we can actually get cheaper transaction costs. And I think Chainlink is also a part of this, right? Could you maybe explain how Chainlink might look on layer two? Is it actually cheaper, but then there's a new set of challenges there because there might be like different economic incentives or what? Like, what are your plans around layer two?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're extremely excited to be seeing all of these L2s popping up. Arbitrum, Optimistic, you know, I think those are definitely a step in the right direction for Ethereum. The way we are involved on our side, for instance, for Optimistic, we've been working with Synthetix, who's been migrating there, and we are providing prices right now on Optimistic Kovan and looking to go to mainnet very soon, whenever the mainnet is ready and stuff. And for Arbitrum, we're also on Kovan there, and we'll be looking to get to mainnet there quite soon as well. So we're extremely kind of excited there because what it means is that DeFi applications will be able to onboard much, much more people, right? Because, you know, you won't have to pay $100 every time you try to make a transaction, which is a lovely user experience, by the way.
Yeah, definitely.
So you'll be able to kind of to allow for more people to come into the space, right? And what this means for us ultimately is that people will be interested in more and more kind of price feeds in more assets in different categories, stocks, commodities, FX, you know, so not only crypto, which we've already seen with Synthetix, but which I think will amplify right? So I'm extremely excited about these developments, obviously, and Chainlink is taking a big part in them by supporting every L2 or sidechains that people ask us to support. We're also on Matic, we're also on XDAI, we're also on BSC. We have users on each one of these chains. So, you know, Chainlink wants to be everywhere where there will be demand for DeFi products, because in the same way that we helped kind of Ethereum DeFi go forward with Aave, with Synthetix, you know, all of these kind of OG projects, we want to do the same with every L2 out there, right? If there is an ecosystem that's to be built and a chain which has builders which are really looking forward to solving DeFi problems, we want to help them. We want to provide their users with oracles that work, that are secure, and that will provide peace of mind for anyone looking to use Chainlink price feeds to build, you know, the new kind of bank of the future. You see, that's really our goal.
Yeah, that makes sense. And like another dominant narrative these days is also NFT. Is there any overlap between Chainlink price oracles and how they can be used in NFTs?
So that's when we go from price oracles to more of what Chainlink is meant to be. And Chainlink in itself is meant to be more as an abstraction layer, right? Doing everything that you would like to have with a smart contract, but which might not be supported by the blockchain, right? So price feeds are one of them. Another one is randomness, right? You have no way of getting random numbers in a reliable way on current blockchains. So what Chainlink does right now is we've worked on a new product called VRF. It's a verifiable randomness function, and it's being used by a very important number of projects. Whenever they mint a new NFT, they use the randomness provided by Chainlink oracles to generate the NFT. And what the randomness allows is to prove in a reliable manner that this NFT has been generated in an honest way, right? No one cheated on the way it was generated. That's a very, very important property, because if there was any doubt in users' minds that NFTs were generated in a malicious manner or in a manner that's not transparent, it would completely fail, right? It would be a disaster. You know, no one wants to go back to the Hearthstone stuff, or, you know, to the stuff where basically you would be opening cards or you would be kind of getting rare items. But there was no transparency on how this was happening, right? And there was no way to know if there is a backdoor or something else, you know? So the way we do things is we provide this verifiable randomness function, and it's being used by Avegochi, it's being used by people like Polkamon. Like, we have many users on Matic mostly, some on Ethereum, and every NFT that gets generated there is being generated through a random function sourced from our oracles. So that's our kind of contribution to this space, and I think it's a very important one, because the whole NFT space, like, you know, you do really need this transparency behind how our NFT is being generated by a platform. Otherwise, there is just no point. You know, like, anyone could just cheat on the function. It would be terrible, you know.
Yeah. And I didn't know Chainlink provided that service. That's really cool. I think the Ethereum Foundation was providing grants as well for this randomness. How do you get randomness on chain? And it's great that you guys are like one viable option out there, and NFTs are using it. And, you know, we've talked about NFTs, we've talked about DeFi, we've talked about Layer 2, and Chainlink is involved in so many different areas. So it's almost like Chainlink is almost like a proxy for Ethereum's growth. They're both growing. From your side, can you see any other areas of growth? What do you think is going to be the next maybe narrative over the summer, over the next 12 months, that most people aren't really seeing from now, we're not really anticipating? Is there anything that stands out to you that we should be watching?
Oof, yeah, man, I wish I knew, because, you know, for instance, NFTs, they did come up out of nowhere, right? I was waking up one morning and I saw Taco Bell was creating their own NFTs. So, you know, I mean, you're already surprised by this space. That's something that's really quite amazing. You never know. Look, for me, because I'm kind of, you know, a big DeFi proponent, I really do think we're going to see this next wave coming, which I was discussing earlier. Of people coming into the space, right? And what I'm seeing more and more is people who are on Ethereum, but who are also looking to get into perhaps new ecosystems, right? And on our side, our goal is to help, you know, anyone, right? Because, you know, we just want the space to succeed as a whole. So what I think will probably happen is if people go to, you know, BSC or to Polkadot or to, you know, L2 sidechains, you know, all of this stuff, they will definitely need bridges, right? They will need bridges. They will need to be able to transfer assets in a reliable way. So I do think this will get very, very high demand in the coming kind of, in the very near future, right? So this should be interesting to see. I think the space is really going to evolve from being this kind of hobbyist, because right now, let's face it, right? I mean, Ethereum, it's too expensive right now for the average Joe to get into, you know? But I really do think that in the next few months, with the gas fees diminishing, with kind of the UX improving, and with the people having more time, right? Because that's what the pandemic has given. Like, everyone is stuck at home, right? So yeah. People will be able to, will probably, like, we'll see a new wave of people who are much more mainstream, not only from kind of, you know, hedge funds and traditional finance world, but also from, you know, sectors which don't really have much to do with crypto, maybe the average working guy and, this kind of stuff. I think they'll start getting into DeFi, you know, and I think hopefully we'll have L2s which are usable, you know, Arbitrum, Optimistic, and you know, all the other chains, and they'll be able to get into DeFi without having to pay hundreds of dollars in transaction fees, and they'll be able to see the wonderful world of, you know, a transparent, financial, open kind of system, right? I think this is very important. And I really do think this will fuel the next wave of adoption for the next years. Everything is converging towards this, you know, everything. DeFi is popping up. So many people are creating new stuff. The global world kind of, you know, with a kind of financial world that we have today, right, where we have a stimulus package every week now. everything is pushing people to do it, you know. Everything is pushing people towards that direction. I don't think we could have imagined a better situation for DeFi and the crypto space to pop up than the one we have today, right? So I'm really, really expecting an explosive growth in the next few months, fueled by new adoption, fueled by L2s popping up, fueled by lower gas fees, better user adoption, by all the smart people who will be building products that are easy to start using. And I'm very excited to have Chainlink provide all the services which are needed around this new wave, you see? So, yeah, I think we're in for a ride, and I think it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, what an exciting time to be in this space, what an exciting time to be joining this space. I mean, I think it's becoming the pace of innovation, the pace of growth of different experiments playing out. It's almost overwhelming. You know, it's so hard to track everything that's going on. There's just, it's like you know, like an open pipe, which is just gushing out with different projects and thousands of developers working on their own thing. There's so much activity, and it's really cool to see. So for Chainlink, what's your next big milestone? Because I know you guys just launched off-chain reporting. Like, what is the next big thing that people can look forward to and be excited about?
Sure. I mean, on our side, we are still launching more and more networks. We're still supporting more and more blockchains, right? So this is really our goal right now. We're looking to probably support, you know, I think we have this kind of picture that in the next few months, there will probably be a few kind of, you know, hundreds, thousands of price feeds networks out there, right? Because you'll have more blockchains, you have off-chain aggregation, which optimizes everything, right? Yeah, so the way I look at this, what will probably happen is that, you know, you'll get this new wave of builders, right? And what we want to be is, in the gold rush, you had all of these people kind of selling the tools, right, to the miners. Chainlink will be the platform selling the tools for these builders to go and build their thing, to go and build their application, go and build the future kind of of finance, future of France, as a meme going around on Twitter. So yeah, I think that's what will happen. As far as new features, you know, we're working on staking, we're working on many things on our side. Obviously, this is really kind of, you know, we're doing multiple things at once, right? We're expanding and we're working internally on always improving the security, always improving the reputation system, always improving the way people can get self-service, right? Get price feeds easily without having to interact with us as much as possible. So, yeah, we'll be the supporters of this huge growth going around by launching more networks, more kind of blockchains, you know, supporting more blockchains, all of this stuff.
Yeah, you're painting a very, you know, exciting vision. So my last question is, for people that do want to get involved with Chainlink, they want to be part of this journey, like how can they participate?
Sure. I mean, look, what you're looking into more and more is really people doing exciting stuff with our product, right? So we've had with the Oracles. So we've had the hackathon, you know, well, I think we actually still have the ongoing hackathon. We need to check. But yeah, teams are building some really exciting stuff there. What we want to see is people being the ones creating the new wave of applications on Ethereum using connected smart contracts, right? Because connected smart contracts basically means that you're not siloed, that you have access to the real world, you know? So maybe you're creating an insurance product using Chainlink Oracles, and the Chainlink Oracles are reading from a Tesla sensor, and you know, based on this Tesla sensor, they look at the mileage of the car, and based on the mileage, they're able to kind of, you know, provide some insurance claim, or they're able to do some payments. You know, like maybe you create a product which is able to kind of prototype how supply chain would work using Chainlink Oracles and the Ethereum blockchain or any blockchain. You know, so we're looking to see what are the next products that will really kind of take off through the use of connected smart contracts, right? Connected smart contracts being the ones which interact directly with the real world through the use of Chainlink Oracles, you know? So, you know, you can either build, but you can also, you know, feel free to get on our Discord, talk with the team, you know, discuss things with us. So, yeah, there are multiple ways to get involved. But yeah, I think people should look into this as we are building a new world. You know, it's a new kind of paradigm. It's a completely new world, right? And just like Ethereum is providing you some tools with smart contracts and, you know, all of this beautiful stuff, we're providing you some tools to access the real world. So come and see and explore, because the frontiers have not been set yet. The frontiers keep moving, and, you know, what wasn't possible yesterday will be possible tomorrow. And whoever is listening to this podcast might be the one, you know, who makes the tomorrow happen, right? So yeah, I really encourage people to look into it.
Yeah, well said. And there are so many opportunities out there to build great products, to build great communities. We are so early on, and you know, Chainlink provides that key tool that if you do need an oracle to provide some kind of information, it's there, it's available. It's a great infrastructure piece, and it's great to have. So, Johan, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know you have an insanely busy schedule. How can people get in touch with you or follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, sure. So my Twitter is at Johan Aid. You know, Aid, like the name I have in this podcast. You know, I think it would be the best way to follow. Obviously, I'm not extremely, well, not obviously, but yeah, I'm not extremely active on Twitter and stuff. So I guess you can probably listen what I say on this podcast, and I'll be on other events. And the best way to get in touch with me, build something cool, and I'll probably be the one contacting you.
Very nice. Yeah. Okay. Again, thank you. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We hope we kind of gave you some insights into oracles, into DeFi, into what the future holds for us. And thank you again for listening. Until next time, bye-bye.
Perfect. Thank you, Dennis.
This podcast is supported by the awesome team at Kyber Network. For more information and to find out how Kyber Network provides liquidity to over 100 different dApps, wallets, and exchanges, check out kyber.network.